coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to breathe.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Who Shot Ya? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today, film reviews editor at The Rep, El Mero Mero de Navidad, which we are getting closer and closer to now.
I know.
It is Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what is good with you?
Well, it's very exciting for those of us in the Los Angeles area. So sorry to get regional on you for a second, but we now have Milk Bar. Which, you know, it's been a thing in New York for a while. They had one in Vegas. But Milk Bar is like the place for dessert stuff. And if you have not been to one yet, go watch the Christina Tosi episode of Chef's Table on Netflix. And it will give you an idea. She's the woman who invented the, you know, confetti birthday cake without the frosting on the sides.
That's something you got to invent?
Well, somebody had to do it first.
Okay.
It's cake science.
The whole idea of the infused cereal milk, you know, or like it tastes like the milk at the bottom of the cereal bowl, and then she turns that into like soft serve. Just amazing stuff. I've been a couple times now. If I suddenly am twice my size, you'll know it's because of Milk Bar, because it's all so delicious.
I saw a picture that you posted on your Instagram of you at this location.
Yes.
And the smile that was coming through on your face. Only the sugar that I could smell also through my phone was bigger than that. It looked amazing.
I need it. I need it in my life.
Is it like Milk Bar one word or like Milk Bar two words?
I think it's one word. But I mean, the sign just says milk, but it's called Milk Bar.
Weird.
Yeah.
I'll check that mug out. That voice that you heard right there, she's back. She is exhausted. She's traveled the world.
I am halfway here. I'm halfway in Korea still.
Still on Busan time.
But we know that you are going to make it through this episode,
oh
yo.
My
we
God.
Know what's
going to
happen. I believe in you. Con fuerza.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, film critic, host of Switchblade Sisters podcast. It is the one and only Sometimes It Snows in April. April Wolf.
April. Hey.
Yes. Yes. What is good with you and your yawn?
Well, on the day that we are recording this, the year of our Lord 2018... Angela Lansbury is 93 years old today. It's
yes.
her birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
And
birthday
just,
she celebrated.
Oh, my God. She's just one of those people who, I mean, my love for her is so deep and so strong. Mm-hmm. And I've read every book on her. And I'm just so grateful to live in the timeline where I overlap with her. I'm just so grateful. I think she's just a wonderful human, and she's just the best. And so, Angela Lansbury, happy birthday,
and
girl.
After the show, April and I will do the entire Bosom Buddies duet from Maine.
I'm going to be Angie, if that's okay.
Oh, no, please. I demand to be
you
B.
Need
Arthur.
To be B, okay.
No question. Ricky, what's good?
God damn it!
Too sleepy!
I know! Yeah. So slow. I was just like waiting for us to kind of naturally peter out of that, and it didn't happen, so.
Oh, what's good besides my brand new commemorative White Sox hat with embroidered Chicago flag on that mug? Thank you for asking. Whoa, check it, check it, check it, check it.
That's cool. I think they're less racist than the Cubs, so.
I mean, I am not one to poke that fire because there is a tension between Cubs fans and Sox fans, you know. But I feel like myself and, you know, other Cubs fans out there, I think you can all agree we have moved past that. We each have a World Series now. So it's like, you know, we've both got to the finish line. We can look across at each other and be like, yo, it's all good, dude.
I'm glad you walked me through the semiotics of this hat because I had no clue.
That's what's up, yo. That's what's up. But not only is that what's good, this weekend I got out of town. I left L.A.
Ah.
I went to Santa Barbara.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wow.
I went down there with my girl, enjoyed some Latin jazz.
Ooh.
Pancho Valdez on Friday night, which was great. Saturday, just enjoyed the scenery.
Did you rent bicycles?
Did not rent bicycles. Oh, okay. No, we did a lot of walking.
Okay.
I'm a fan of walking.
That works.
A lot of walking through downtown. Chilled in a hot tub. You know, I'm going to tell you, hey, milk, talking about delicious things. Apples, we wanted to do mimosas, but we didn't have any orange juice. apple cider and champagne, y'all. Ooh. Talk to that. Talk to that.
That sounds like a Midwestern thing. Yeah, I
mean, and a can of Spam.
Exactly.
It's very autumnal, though. I'm liking the seasonal kick there.
Yeah. That's what we all kept saying to ourselves. We were just like, this is because of the fall. It was delicious.
Waiter, another cinnamon stick.
Oh, but it was a great weekend, great weekend. Hey, y'all, on today's episode, we are going to be talking about the Ryan Gosling space adventure, First Man, plus we're going to be talking about getting scared by the movies in a segment that we are calling Who Shot Ya? Scared Stupid. And as always, we will have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. We're all going to read a news headline, and any one of us will jump in with our take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? I'm going to start off with this one because I just watched this trailer like on Saturday. It's not really a trailer yet. It's kind of a teaser for the trailer, the new Aladdin live-action remake. One of the screenwriters for the original animated film, not too happy at the moment. Terry Rossio, who wrote the original screenplay along with Ted Elliott, Ron Clements, and John Musker, tweeted out this, quote, "So strange that literally the only word spoken in the new Aladdin trailer happens to be a rhyme that my writing partner and I wrote, and Disney offers zero compensation to us or to any screenwriters on any of these live-action remakes, not even a T-shirt or a pass to the park." The rhyme that he's referring to, sidebar, not really a rhyme, is "Only one may enter here, one whose worth lies far within, the diamond in the rough."
Maybe it rhymes in the original Arabic.
I'm pretty sure. And Will Smith doing the voice, he'll probably like make that shit, you know, he'll put some stank on it. Rossio goes on to say that Disney owns the rights to the original animated feature, and since no one predicted that they were going to remake it into a live-action film, there was nothing to put in the contract. Rossio even says that he asked for a Disneyland pass as compensation, but was denied. I mean, that's a little harsh. Is this important?
Well, then they're
going
to have to give everyone a Disneyland pass.
If we give one to you,
it'll be anarchy.
We got to give it to the people who made Mulan. We got to get, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Oh, that's a lot of Disney passes.
That's a lot of Disney passes.
You know, this is the sort of like Hollywood scumbaggery I thought was a thing of the past. Like, you know, you'd run into all these sort of embittered old MGM stars who, in their contracts, were not getting a dime for when their movies were being rerun on television or whatever. But yeah, the idea that you could write this big hit animated feature film in the 90s and now a couple of decades later have it remade and get nothing for it because your contract didn't specifically say anything about live action remakes or whatever just seems like a giant fuck over.
Yeah, it's really just like these live action remakes are just fucking terrible. They're stupid and they're terrible. And they're honestly just like a weird cost-conscious way for Disney to just keep making movies even if there's no creativity to them whatsoever.
I mean, look, obviously audiences love them. They've all been giant
audiences hits. Are fucking dumb.
Well, I'm not saying they're not. And I think there have been some things in some of them that have been okay. Like, I thought a lot of Jungle Book was good. There were things in Beauty and the Beast that I like. I could live without Cinderella and I'm really dreading Dumbo. But yeah, I mean, I think we're dealing with two things. Yes, creatively, it does seem really kind of a brain dead thing. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, to also be shitty to people whose work the studio is now exploiting, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, they're just using their script. It's just like, oh, cool, we've already got the script. We might as well just use it again.
Yeah.
And you're like, really?
Without paying anybody.
Yeah. Ugh, and these Disney, assholes.
And Disney's not struggling either. They are making paper.
Well, Disney is a fucking monopoly. Yeah. I would love if more directors who work for Disney that had, you know, more of a voice would say something sometimes. Like, there are some Marvel directors out there, for instance, who could say something. There are some big people out there who, like, you know, supposedly stand for the little guys. And you're like, really? Like, Disney?
Maybe James Gunn.
Yeah, right.
Was A Wrinkle in Time, was that a Disney
joint? That was Disney.
That was Disney.
I mean, Ava's pretty vocal. I don't know if she's been vocal against Disney yet, but I don't know what her experience has been.
You know, I mean, like, she was very timid but supportive, like when the LA Times had their ban going on.
That's true. She did. Right. She did do that. But I think unfortunately, because there are few, you know, there are ever fewer studios in town, yep, with Disney buying up Fox and all. That's, I can imagine why people in the industry don't want to. They don't want to make that enemy.
It's super scary though.
I agree.
Alonzo, you want to take this next
one? In an interview with the Hong Kong movie site Jane Stars, Mr. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon himself, Chinese movie legend Chow Yun-fat. Oh, come on. He's done so much cooler stuff than Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Who writes this? Chow Yun-fat says that he plans to donate his entire fortune to charity. That comes out to a whopping $714 million American dollars. The actor says, my dream is to be a happy and normal person. In that same article, he claims he only spends about $102 a month. He apparently stays frugal by taking public transportation, buying discount clothes, and volunteering in his free time. Is this important? Do you care?
I have questions here. So he's doing this while living in the U.S.? He's, like, giving his money away and then just going to kick it here?
I think he lives in Hong Kong.
Okay,
yeah,
so he's,
he lives
all right,
in Hong Kong.
I mean, good on you, Chow Yun. That's dope.
That's great, but isn't it so weird where, like, Americans were just like, I'm very skeptical of this.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
What's
going on here?
Is this a tax thing?
Exactly. Yeah. What loophole did you find?
Or, like, do you hate your offspring
question. Yeah. I guess the heirs are not going to be thrilled about
this. Is this just, like, a big fuck you to people in your family? Because you're like, no, don't care.
Oh, good on you, sir.
Yeah, totally. I'm fine with it. If he's not trying to pull one on us.
Well, yes.
We'll wait and see when he's dead.
We shall
see. We'll
then it'll all come out.
Yeah.
Who was the one girl who got, like, in trouble? Somebody overseas just got in trouble.
Oh.
They, like, disappeared.
Oh,
she
like Fan Bing Bing? Or?
Yeah.
Fan Bing Bing.
Yeah.
That story was nuts.
She's like the Wesley Snipes of Asia, right? Like, they had not paid her taxes at all or something?
Yeah, well, I mean, like,
the Snipes,
that's the thing. Most Hong Kong stars have a workaround with U.S. and foreign studios so that half of their money, or more than half of it, is paid to them in a way that they can dodge taxes for Hong Kong.
Mm.
And she is just being used as an example.
Oh,
wow.
Because all of them are doing it. And so it puts all of them on
blast.
And it says, hey, you can't do this anymore. So she is being made an example of.
Gotcha.
Okay.
You know, and then, like, Bai Ling a few years back was made an example of for, like, you must always say you love China. You know, like, there's just, like, the way that they can just kind of, like, dance their Hollywood or their stars around is just kind of crazy. It's weird.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, do we do that? I don't know.
We're just afraid to elect
them as president.
We're just afraid to talk back at Disney, you know.
We're just afraid to. So I'll take this last one.
Okay.
If you worry that the United States is too divided, fear not. David Lynch has the solution to unite our country. In an interview with Yahoo News, Lynch says that it is absolutely possible to heal our divided nation by tapping into the, quote, unified field through transcendental meditation, he says. Quote, right now, every single human being participates in creating that collective consciousness. We have a dark, brooding cloud all around the world, but if we enliven this field of peace within, it'll turn that cloud from a dark, brooding cloud to a beautiful golden cloud. Boom. That's what the script says. Boom. I'm not saying
that. I already know my favorite thing in this episode is Alonzo yelling, who writes these things?
So is this important, and do you care?
This is the water. This is the well.
Yeah, we just all listen to that. We come together and we're like, what is...
Yeah, that could be my mantra, right? Is that okay with that? How long before the bug comes out? My mouth. I'm a huge fan of meditation, so I support everything that he's saying. I feel like meditation in the U.S. still kind of has that taboo of just like, oh... What are you doing?
Wait, there's like 30 minutes where you don't work?
Yeah. What you're doing is called sleeping. Why don't you just like take a nap instead?
Well, my only qualm is that I have a few friends that did it and they all had to pay like $1,000.
Yeah, that's the thing. TM is like not accessible.
Yeah.
It's like for rich people. It's you got to be like sponsored.
TM with another little TM for trademark.
Yeah. Oh, no. I do broke ass meditation where it's like I went one day. And like for like an afternoon, and the person just kind of like walked me through like, here's a good way that you can like calm your brain down and
have
some peace of mind.
Do you have a mantra?
Yes, he didn't. Didn't give one to me, but he was like, you know, like choose one and like that'll be yours. Kind of like Inception. Like, don't tell anybody what it is.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I was like, never ask.
It's a like big butts.
I cannot lie.
I know when my body is in a funk because I haven't like sat down for 20 minutes in a day, or sometimes I'll do 30 if I'm feeling crazy, and just kind of like, let's reset here, let's recalibrate.
Yeah. Yeah, Americans should do that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, maybe like the whole world should do it more, I think. I don't know if it's going to solve all of our fucking problems, because there are people who meditate who are still assholes.
I was about to say.
I mean, you can't change an asshole.
But you can slowly wipe away at one. You know?
I think you can just like, you can bring their blood pressure down, but they're still going to be an asshole. You know, like fucking Patrick Bateman of American Psycho, like he meditated.
Yes,
he did. He's still going to kill people,
true.
You know?
Or thought about it a lot.
I mean, I put that more into Phil Collins than anything.
Wait, did you just blame Phil Collins, or did you?
No.
That's what drove him
Phil
to murder.
Phil Collins gets you going. I hear Sue Sudi, y'all. I'm like, somebody's about to get chopped. We are going to take a break, y'all. When we come back, we will talk about First Man. You're listening to Who Shot Ya?
I listen to Reading Glasses because Bria and Mallory have great tips.
My suggestion for book festivals is just go for one day.
I listen for the author interviews.
I was a huge Goosebumps fan.
Oh, yes.
R.L. Stine was totally my jam.
I don't even read. I just like their chemistry together.
Literally, if on the back it said, like, this book made me shit my pants, I'd be like, I'm buying this book.
Yeah.
Like, I think the problem with blurbs a lot of times...
I like that we both want to crap ourselves over books.
I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara.
We're Reading Glasses, and we solve all your bookish problems every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today we are talking about First Man. Alonzo, please, por favor, un placer. Can you give us a synopsis of the film?
Neil Armstrong goes to the moon.
Boom. Credits. That's it, yo. That's it.
Obviously, it takes a while to get there. Not just the actual voyage, but all the other journeys beforehand to make the space program work.
Before we get into the actual movie, one of the things that I learned from this movie is that you don't just leave the Earth and get to the moon. When it's like 4 days later,
yeah.
I was like, oh. It takes like a minute to get to the moon.
You gotta like slingshot around the Earth once or something.
Yeah. I was like, you like fly up there, and then like 2 hours later, there's that moon. No.
Straight line.
Lesson learned, y'all.
So weird.
You've seen Independence Day too many times, or worse, the sequel.
I mean, we shan't be talking about
no.
that. But we are going to talk about First Man. What do we think of Damien Chazelle? I feel so fancy when I say his name. How do we feel about these?
Well, April yawns. I'll start.
What did you think of Yawn Yawn Land?
I liked La La Land quite a bit.
Okay.
You know, obviously, I do like musicals, mm-hmm. and I like the kind that he was really going after, which is the sort of like bittersweet 1960s Jacques Demy musicals, where they weren't like big, giant, elaborate numbers, but more sort of like people that felt like they were incorporating song and dance into their day-to-day lives. You know, so I think there was some cool stuff to that. I thought Whiplash was interesting as a sort of like... You know, it's such a boy movie. It's such
yes.
a like, you know, like men breaking down other men as they, you know, da, da, da. And so, you know, Dave and I were talking how he was saying that in this movie he's dealing with this character who's so closed off to his emotions, whereas in the other movies, you know, they are, you know, tough and they put a bit of a wall against the world, but they are creators, you know, they're musicians, they're drummers, or they play piano or whatever, whereas Neil Armstrong is all about like science and technology and politics, not politics, but like piloting and all that stuff. And so there's never, the movie can almost never sort of crack that facade. And Dave's like, well, is he celebrating this? I was like, no, I think it's just like, it's a real guy. This is a real story. And that's just what American men in the 1960s tended to be like.
Yeah. That was a conversation I had afterwards the movie feels like so emotionally distant intentionally, but not in a they're trying to like. I felt like I had to remind myself this is what men had to act like in that time period,
right?
Because before that was the 50s, and people were, I mean, were even more kind of like reserved. There's bottled a reason up, when yeah. the 60s hit, everybody was like, you know what? I will smoke that weed. Because you can't just keep all that in you. I was surprised at how much I wasn't as, I enjoyed the movie, but I wasn't as into it because it was so emotionally distant. Because I've, and here's my second, my Michael Mann reference, a movie like Heat, where it is about a character who has such a damn focus that is like blind to everything else. Or like another, like space movie, like I'll say like Jodie Foster in Contact, where she's like, I know I need to get to space. I need to get up there. Where this one, I was just kind of like, I don't know. I wanted. I don't know if it was the Ryan Gosling performance, but I was like, just let me in a little bit more, so I can be more emotionally invested.
I have some thoughts, but I want to hear what April has to say first.
It's too damn long. I mean, if you want to make a mini series, then make a mini series. But this is like testing the bounds of what is going to be entertaining or interesting.
Feel like 2 hours and 18 minutes, or did it feel like it felt double like, that?
It felt like double that. I did not know how long it was when I went in, and I was just like, okay, here's a natural ending spot. And then I was like, okay, here's a natural ending spot. And there's another one. Oh, my God, there's so many fucking natural ending spots, and not one of them was taken. And I'm like, and then when I was just like, oh, shit, are we going to go all the way up to a quarantine? Oh, fuck. like we know this. We don't need this. And it just felt like it was... Like, I didn't even mind how distant it was and how cold it was, because I think that that's, like, an interesting take on space, and it's a much more accurate, probably, take, as opposed to, you know, like, the right stuff for some other ones, where it's just like, yeah, wham, bam, pow, Americans are cowboys in space, you know, because that's not what it is. Like, space is actually just, it really is just people, random humans who, like, slapdash things together. Like, you look at the inside of the capsule and it's just like, it seems like, you know, that could fall apart because it's just, then that's more natural.
That's what I think is the strongest point of the movie is putting you into those capsules and reminding you just how, like, these are these rickety ass, like, the rivets are shaking and other men made this thing, you know, and, you know, we all grew up in an era in which we'd been to the moon and that's a thing that happened and we didn't have to think about it as having been that much of a challenge because we did it. Obviously, it worked. But before it happens and you don't know if it's going to come off successfully, you know, then that's terrifying. And I think the movie puts you into that mindset of like, we don't know if this is going to work, but we're giving it our best shot. And I thought that was much more interesting than Neil Armstrong's inner life, which I think the movie probably accurately portrays. I mean, I haven't read the book. I don't know that much about the guy, but it scans that he would just be that kind of lockdown dude. And so it falls upon his wife, probably as she did in real life with their kids and stuff, but it falls upon Claire Foy to sort of be the heart of the movie and be the person who says things and expresses things and feels things when he doesn't.
Claire Foy's role,
astronaut's wife.
this felt, that role felt very much like I have seen this role in Apollo 13.
Right. Lewis said that he puts his movie in the category of there's a woman and she's concerned.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But, you know, I think that I think she does as much as she can with it. But yes, structurally, it is very familiar. And I did at least like the fact that she gets some really juicy confrontation scenes, one where she's telling off Kyle Chandler at NASA. But also when she's making Neil Armstrong, like, you're going to wake our sons up and you're going to tell them that you're going to the moon and you might not come back. You know? And then when the kids start asking him questions, he gets in that sort of squirmy lockdown position that you've seen him do in press conferences.
Exactly.
And it's like, I loved that bit of business. But, I mean, I think, unfortunately, unless you're making Hidden Figures, there's not a lot of ways to do this story, to do a NASA movie and have a lot for the women to do because, historically speaking, they were the wives.
I mean, I mean, that's something that I think about going through a movie like this. And it's also like, well, why did we need to see this movie then?
I think that's a really good point. Even before this movie came out, I was like, who is asking for another movie about how we made it to the moon?
Yeah.
It feels very like generational. I think younger
Damien
people.
Damien Chazelle is like an old man. You know,
he's made like Leah look a movie about jazz.
Several movies about jazz.
Yeah, he's like, this one is underlying about jazz.
But if you think about it this way, though, like we're in an era right now where like science is being ignored. The government is doing its best to like stop doing any of the things that it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so to look back on a period not that long ago, like I was alive when the moon landing happened. I was in diapers, but I was alive. I was 18. No.
I was alive. I was 37 years old.
You know, I was two. Anyway. But you know, the notion that like that we cared about science, we cared about technology, we believed in the future, and the government was capable of massing together these people and this technology and the money necessary and all that stuff to do this extraordinary thing, I feel like given the current situation we're in now, it's a good reminder of like the, you know, I think a lot of times when you hear people sort of like poo-poo climate change or just do some idiotic thing, the go-to people is always like, we sent somebody to the moon. Like, why can we not handle this problem X, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think we have to remind people every so often, yeah, we did send somebody to the moon, you know?
Yeah, and yeah. I agree with that. I just think it could have been shorter.
Well, put a pin in that when we talk about Suspiria in a couple of weeks, and I'll pick up that baton.
I feel like if people today want to see a movie about space, they want your Guardians of the Galaxy. like they legit want to be like entertained, and they don't just want to see. I think when our generation thinks, or like my generation thinks of the space program, we still go back to like the Challenger explosion.
Mm.
You know, like the big vivid memory that we have,
which is arguably what ended it. You know,
yeah.
I think you can look at that as a point, like where we all were like, is this worth it? Do we need the? You know. You know, look, to bring it back to a movie that I know you love, 1776.
Oh, so much.
I do admire.
I did not think that was how it was going to end.
I admire a movie that creates suspense about a thing that we know is going to happen, and also does the thing, like I said before, where reminds you that a thing that we just sort of take for granted as a thing that happened at one point was not a thing that had happened yet, and to think that it could happen was maybe lunacy.
Yeah.
You know, and I also do like the fact that the movie, this is probably the first movie about space exploration I've ever seen that addresses the fact that there were a lot of people in this country that were like, why are we spending money on this? What's the point?
I actually thought they kind of, again, they downplayed that a little too much when it would kind of like, there was like the conversation from the politicians happening.
You get a whole Whitey's on the Moon montage.
Yeah,
come on.
It's
you think Apollo 13 had that? Hell no.
I wanted more of that because it was just a good, it was an interesting way to show like, oh yeah, not everybody was on board with this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. People were in great poverty and we're like, what the fuck? Why are we doing this?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean.
What are your thoughts on Damien Chazelle in general? I kind of skipped asking you that, April.
I fucking hated La La Land.
Wow, really?
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those movies where I was told it was amazing and I couldn't get into screening. So I was just like, oh, this must be really good. And then I sat down to watch it at AFI Fest and was just like, uncomfortable with how bad it was.
Oh, wow.
I was just, I was like embarrassed for people there.
Damn.
Oof.
Wow.
And I was with a friend who was just like, please don't let her like this. And I remember I caught her eye and she was just like, what the fuck is this? I was like, oh, thank God. So I did not enjoy that movie at all. Whiplash, I think, is just like, it's okay.
Anybody see Guy and Madeline on a park bench?
I just heard about that movie for the first time today when I was looking to see.
It's kind of his rough draft of La La Land. It's sort of an attempt to sort of like do a straightforward movie where musical numbers break out. Mm. And it's all right.
I just think he's myopic. Like as a storyteller, he's just kind of myopic. There's just not like a, it doesn't, I don't know. I don't buy his worlds that he makes. Like I don't understand them.
I don't understand them. Like with this one, I was again. I mean, I feel I sound like a broken record now. I was like, this motherfucker's not letting me in emotionally, and that could have been because of the era. But with
it's a movie about your dad, basically.
Well, my dad is was a whole other story.
With Whiplash, I enjoyed that movie until the third act, where I was just like, "What is happening right now?" I'm trying to walk around the spoiler, but something happens to this character, and then he still manages to do something else after that. And I was like, no, you lost me. I'm out. And La La Land, I was expecting to hate. I hated how much everybody thought it was the greatest fucking thing in the world. I hated what all the critics were saying, that it was the greatest thing and that this guy was the future. And then I watched it and I was like, hey, that was pretty good. It was not. It was a musical that. What was the word you used last week?
Diegetic.
Diegetic musical. Where I was like, this makes sense to me. I'm buying it.
It's a movie that it took me a while for it to grow on me. Like I remember it opened Venice that year and they pre-screened it for me in Los Angeles and I wrote a mixed to positive review. But then before I published it, I saw it again at the press screening in Venice. I was like, oh no, wait. I think. I actually am more in tune of what it is he's trying to do here. So
I don't know.
But that's just the kind of movie I like.
It's one of those things where, me and my mom love musicals. And I was just like, I don't know. Maybe you should see it, Mom. And she's just like, oh, I kind of want to see Hidden Figures. And then her friend dragged her to see La La Land instead of Hidden Figures. And she was like, she walked out. She walked out into Hidden Figures while her friend, she was like, this is terrible. And I was like, I know, it's really bad.
It's a million times better than The Greatest Showman, though.
Oh, my God. Oh, it is, actually. Yes, oh, wow. Wow, wow,
can
wow.
Can we agree on that?
So bad. And the thing is, though, that, I would say this movie is probably the one of his that I like the most. It's just that it was too fucking long. Hmm. And it was one of those things where I think that he's given a lot of rain because now he's Damien Chazelle. He's a name. But I think that someone should have come in and been like, hey, you need an editor. Mm. And you maybe shouldn't have all these Terrence Malick things that just pop up in the middle of your movie because it's not totally serving everything.
I think the editing's actually really good. I mean, it's the guy he always works with.
No, I meant his story.
Oh, I see what you mean.
I meant come in with that script that is good and solid and this is just bloated. It is so bloated and for the type of movie that he's making, which is handheld, and very close up, that's really hard to swallow for 2.5 hours.
Did anybody see it in IMAX? Because I hear that the moon sequences are really
I did not see it in IMAX, but I heard that, it is. That's a preferred way to see it.
I heard that it's it actually isn't that much different.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Because they shot the moon stuff with the IMAX cameras and everything.
Yeah, I heard
they shot it on the moon. I don't know if you guys
knew
that.
Oh, my God. Didn't he say, in an interview, it totally would have been harder to, fake a moon landing than to, land on the moon? And I was just like, dude, you just made a movie about how it takes,
faking a moon
decades to land on the moon, and you think that it would be harder to fake that? I'm so,
Now that I'm thinking about it, I agree with you. I can think of two scenes in particular that are the exact same scenes. One of them is back-to-back. One of them is when he, leaves the party, old boy comes up, comes to, see. He's, looking at, the moon through,
in the backyard.
And the guy goes out and tries to talk to him, and he, shuns him away.
Yeah.
And then the same exact scene happens right after that. I was like, you just had this conversation.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this again?
Yeah.
And then at one point it shows him training much later in the movie. And I was like, I don't know why you're reminding me that he's good at his job.
Yeah.
Could've I kind of got this. That. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I never felt get on with it. It all felt of a piece to me.
What was your, my theater was hilarious because it was just it was straight up only old white people.
The greatest generation.
And it was in Alhambra where they're I'm usually the only white person at this theater. So it was a very interesting, people clearly were taken from the nursing homes to see this.
Is there a bus outside?
There was Clint Eastwood trailer that was on before it, obviously, the one for the mule. And that was hilarious because, one of the older guys said out loud, oh, that one looks like it could be good. And then another guy from across the theater, like another old man voice, was just like, oh, it's definitely good. Like across the theater. And I turned around and I was just like, oh, this is my audience? Like, and even that audience was sighing heavily during this movie. Like, when is it going to end? So
I could see how this would be a Trek, dare I say, a Star Trek. Thank you. For
Jesus Christ.
I'm on fire tonight, y'all.
All right.
for an older crowd watching this movie. Yeah, because, I mean, it's you feel those 2 hours and 18 minutes.
Yeah.
When it ended, I was like, good, that's all I need. But it was it pushes it a little bit. Overall, so what do we think? Should people screen this movie, stream it, or skip it?
I may be alone on this, but I'm going to say screen it. I think it's actually really well put together. I thought it was very visceral, the sort of feeling of being inside those space capsules and trying to control them and just the danger inherent in the entire enterprise. And I think it's the kind of movie where you really do want to see it on the big screen. Like, this is not one you want to watch on a plane. Not that you'd want to watch any movie about aborted air travel on a plane, but you don't want to see it on your laptop.
Solid iPhone movie.
I would say screen it with a caveat that it is okay if you fall asleep during the middle of it for a little while.
I would say screen this movie if you get a chance to watch it in IMAX. I would go back and watch it in IMAX. I really would. Otherwise, I would say stream it and it turned the volume way up, because technically, I don't think I talked about that enough. Technically, I was pretty blown away with like the shots, and yeah, I mean, it really like puts you inside these goddamn death machines.
Rickety ass capsules.
There are certain movies where I watch it where I go, I am just such a wussy. Never in my life would I think, oh yeah, that's something I want to do. That's just not happening. All right, y'all, we are taking a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about scary movies. You are listening to Who Shot Ya?
Beginning this summer, you can listen to new episodes of Inside Pop every other week for an even deeper dive inside the world of pop culture.
Now, we're still bringing you our brilliant insight, always-on-the-nose opinions, and insidery inside information on the most interesting pop culture stories of the week.
And we'll also have interviews with the pop culture professionals who create the culture you crave.
For example, we'll speak to casting directors about how they find the right talent for the right role.
We'll talk to music supervisors about how they choose the music to create the right mood.
And we'll grill producers who'll discuss what exactly a producer does.
Oh man, Sean, how many times has someone said to you, oh, you're a producer, so what do you actually do?
So many times.
Same here. So make sure to catch Inside Pop every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun to indulge your pop culture obsessions.
And to hear in-depth interviews from the movers and the shakers in TV, music, film, and more.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are
April Wolf,
Alonzo Duraldi.
Some of you know Halloween is fast approaching. It's that time of the year where I like to pour myself a cup of bloody Cafe Bustelo, crack open the Book of the Dead, recite some ancient curses, watch a bunch of horror movies, as one is wont to do. April, you were just telling us about how much you are looking forward to the Halloween season, discussing Halloween movies. Tell us why. Walk us through this, what I assume is just your favorite time of the year now.
I'm burnt out. I'm so burnt out on Halloween movies. I mean, obviously, look, we all know I love horror. This is a year-round thing for me.
I mean, you're wearing a Beyond Fest shirt.
I know.
You were so on brand.
I'm so on brand.
Look, we both committed to a season. We just got to own it now.
I know. I'm just so tired of it now. Yeah, like, there's some scary shit out there. I don't know.
No, you right, girl. You right. No, talk it out. Talk it out. I will say I am a fan of scary movies. I am nowhere near the level of fan that I believe you are. I mean, yeah. Obviously, fucking. I mean, you know your shit backwards and forwards.
And does this all go back to the grandparents, or were there other things that sort of led you to horror?
I mean, it's mostly grandparents. And I was talking about this on Twitter the other day, the fact that if you're a Michigander who grew up in the 80s, that Sam Raimi's movies mm-hmm. had a very large influence on on the Michigander community. Mm. It made a lot of horror fans in Michigan. Mm. And then also, like, Detroit exists. And, and, you know, like, Devil's Night. And there's just kind of, like, this, like, embrace of kind of, like, the spooky or the, you know, the otherworldly in that state, this weird thing that we have. So,
yeah. I would say, for me, I would say it's, I mean, you're a champion of the video store, is being able to go to the video store.
Yes.
And where I would go, I mean, there was no, it didn't matter how old you were. He just wanted to know, like, what the number was that was on the movie box so you can go grab that. And it's like, I was way too young to watch Evil Dead. Mm-hmm. But I remember watching that and being scared out of my goddamn mind.
The golden age of lurid VHS box covers.
Yes.
Well, that's one of the things. I mean, like, there are a lot of books, compilations of horror movie posters, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. those posters are traditionally the most tits to the glass, wonderful,
when there's
like,
no more
illustrations.
Room in hell.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, yeah, exactly. Like, the funniest taglines, you know, they're just bawdy. They're just, they're busy and they're wonderful and they also, you know, they showcased such great illustrators and that's something that I appreciate when horror films actually bring that back, when they try to make these posters that are in the same vein.
I remember the Faces of Death, the cover of Faces of Death, because it was like three kind of like blurry images that they couldn't show you.
Yeah.
But then it was a drawing. It was like a red backdrop and like a drawing of like a guy in like a surgical suit. But you could tell he wasn't like totally human. And he was holding some shit out. And I was just like, I'm renting that goddamn movie.
Oh, God,
somebody has to rent that. Robert, that was my brother. Robert, rent that movie for me.
Oh, my God. The Critters cover was like, I was obsessed with the Critters cover. And I was obsessed with the April Fool's cover because it was like.
Yeah, yeah.
A woman's back, and she had long hair and a braid on in a noose.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes. That was great.
So, like, even if you never saw the movie, you're like, I know that cover.
Happy birthday to me with the shish kebab.
Mm-hmm. Damn, that's right. Slumber Party. I think it was Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Yeah.
We had, like, the double guitar.
Yeah, yes. The power drill and the guitar. And
yes.
What was the movie a couple of years ago that was... It was sort of mumblecore-y, but not exactly. The college student gets hired as a babysitter and goes to this house.
Oh, Ty West's movie.
Yes.
House of the Devil. Yes.
Yeah. When they put that out on video, they actually did a limited run of VHS tapes.
Ooh.
And
that's
gave
right.
it this sort of like battered looking rental store looking cover, like with the scuffs in the corner and stuff.
Yeah.
It was genius.
Honestly, I think that's definitely, I mean, Ty West has done a lot of movies, but I think that's still going to be one of his better ones. The way that he kind of tried to bring back slow horror, mm-hmm. and slow horror is something that I would also classify as the original Halloween is in that
sure.
camp,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's so much about waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have all these expectations of, like, when someone's going to walk into the middle of the room. Obviously, someone's going to walk out of that dark doorway, but then they don't, you know?
Right,
and
yeah.
there's just, like, that kind of anticipation that, like, makes you just, like, squeeze every yeah. last breath until
you're
like,
tense,
God damn
that's
it.
On you.
Exactly. Yeah. I always tell people, though, that when it's Halloween, and I just think that everyone should be watching The Haunting.
Oh, God, yes.
Robert Wise's movie, The Haunting, because it's still one of the scariest films that's ever made. And
yes.
there are reasons for that. You know, one of the things that he did, which I think is really ingenious, is the fact that he, you know, went to pick up these cameras and was like, I need to get all of your warped lenses that you're going to throw away. Hmm. And they were like, sir! And he was like, no. Like, you don't understand. Like, this is going to work out. And so every lens was warped in a different way. And even if you didn't know that it was warped, like, you still felt like something was weird, like in
something's
a corner
a little off,
or something.
Yeah.
Something's always a little bit off. And it puts you in this very uncomfortable position.
Hmm.
And it's still one of the best horror films ever made.
Yeah, I'm a giant chicken shit, and that's a movie I always recommend to people.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah. I just put that down in my notes.
But no, like, when I think of Grindhouse, I think of, like, movies I can't finish. Like, I did a whole chapter of horror movies, and there are some really good ones, but I could not get through Maniac.
Okay, I've never seen Maniac.
It was so unpleasant. I just couldn't do it.
That's one about the cop, right?
No.
No, that's Maniac.
That's Maniac Cop. Maniac is about a guy who has a weird fetish for like women stuff. He had a thing with has something happened with his mom, and then he's like kills all these women, and I think poses them as mannequins.
Mannequins, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, Elijah Wood did a remake of that not too long ago.
Which I totally did
that's
not
right.
watch.
And I think
I'm
it was,
remembering this.
I think it's probably ill-advised because that is a movie that, you know, was of its time and, you know, has a portrayal of mental illness, for instance, like schizophrenia that is very, like, to the front of the story. And, I don't think it should have been remade. But
did you see the remake?
I saw the trailer and was like, I don't think that I'm going to watch this.
Yes, I hear you.
I have a finite amount of time to watch horror films, and there's a lot of horror films out there.
Yeah.
And I've already seen the original. And that one, you know, I think it's got Tom Savini special effects. And
that's a big sort of groundbreaking thing from that movie is the, like, buckets of gore. And
Okay. All right. Maybe I brought up Grindhouse just because I feel like those movies.
Yeah, because
I say those movies, I feel like the Robert Rodriguez Grindhouse, that whole moments was happening along the same lines as like that Ty West, The House of the Devil.
Oh yeah.
I think my wires got crossed there.
And like not all Grindhouse is horror, but.
Like Death Race 2000 is a grindhouse movie. Like, you know, it can be action.
But
it can
be adjacent. I mean, it's all genre. So,
Women in prison movies are a grindhouse, that kind of thing.
Yeah. A lot of women in prison.
So many.
I have
in the Philippines.
I have my list of like scary movies that I love, and I had to separate it. We've been talking about like a lot of like earlier movies. I have Halloween 1 and 2.
Sure.
I have Friday the 3rd.
Not Season of the Witch. I'm sorry. Halloween 2 is not as good as Season of the Witch.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what Bibb said too. I have a soft spot for 2 because it was the first like horror movie I saw in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw Halloween 1 on NBC, and then I saw Halloween 2 in the theater. But 3, I think, is a movie that we're sort of overrated. Rating now, like it's got a fun central idea, but getting there is a bit of an ordeal.
The music is so good, the idea is hilarious, and it was, you know, it was when they actually were trying to do the anthology thing.
Yes,
and I appreciated that because I liked the idea that they were kind of embracing the same thing of like Tales from the Crypt and this like very kind of cheesy, interesting. And I like the message behind it, the whole, you know, propaganda into children's television and stuff.
Absolutely. Way after the fact, when I found out, like, oh, they were trying to do, like, an anthology thing, I gave that movie much more, like, props.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, I get it. It's not supposed to be Michael Myers. Yeah,
exactly. Right. But at first, I was just like, what are they doing? What?
Yeah,
like,
so did audiences at the time. Yeah. That's why the movie popped.
Like, they didn't even want to make the Halloween 2 with Michael Myers. That wasn't supposed to be the plan. Nope. So, you know. What else is on your list?
I have Friday the 13th, Part 4, 6, and 7. Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
I was just going to say, I was just watching the Mask special features, and that's like... The director, Chuck, what's his name?
What's his name?
He only did Friday the 13th. He only did Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3 before he went and did The Mask. And that was like his proving ground for...
It's not Chuck Russell, is it?
Yeah, it is. That's it. Thank you, Chuck Russell.
Wes Craven's New Nightmare is actually my favorite.
That's one that I want to go back and watch.
It is good.
That one scares me because I feel like it's like you're watching a horror movie unfold in a documentary. Like there's that veil of like fiction that the movie's trying to strip back. And that's the movie I think he had to kind of make before making all the Scream films in terms of the whole metatextual narrative of horror. You know?
Yeah.
I think New Nightmare works really well.
Yeah, I think that's either on Netflix or it's on Amazon Prime because it's like, you know, all these channels have now figured out, like, we should just have a Halloween section.
Yeah.
And that's one that keeps showing up.
Is People Under the Stairs on your list?
It is not.
Damn it!
I'm sorry.
That's such a good one.
But I will add that on there. Near Dark.
Oh, yeah. Good luck finding it.
Yeah,
I got that mug on DVD.
I know you keep saying
this.
You keep saying that.
I wish I hadn't sold mine.
The vignette from Creature that's about the oily monster in the lagoon.
Oh, yeah.
That scares the shit out of me. Big fan of that. And Fright Night. I love Fright Night.
Oh, yeah,
Fright
the original?
Night, I think, yes. Fright Night, I think, is underrated as fuck.
Fright Night is good, but it talk about movies that are too long. Like, that movie could lose a good 20 minutes. And the remake also. Like, that's the thing they share is they're both too fucking long.
I was surprised that I was, like, into the remake.
Yeah, it's
I thought
not
I was,
bad.
I was not looking forward to it at all. And then I watched it, and I was like, oh, that was okay.
I love the original The Hitcher.
Yes.
So good.
Big fan of that movie. Yeah. That was up until recently on HBO streaming, and I watched that, and I was like, this movie's fucked up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now, movies that are like, I would say from whatever year 7 came out onward, I have 7 on my list. I have Get Out on there.
Sure.
It Follows. The Dawn of the Dead remake.
Sure.
Babadook.
The Babadook. There you go. I would add on there. I ran out of time, which is why I stopped. But totally, the Babadook. Babadook was amazing.
Under the Shadow.
What's Under the Shadow? I don't even know what that is.
Baba Kanvari's movie. It's about the night set in the 1980s during the Iran-Iraq War, and it's about jinn spirit and like this woman who's like just lost her all of her freedom. She has to hang out with her little kid all the time because she can't go to medical school because of the revolution that's happening. And then at the same time, there's like a fucking bomb that drops on in her apartment building that's unexploded. And there's like jinn ghosts that are popping up. And it is like socially interesting and scary as fuck.
What's this movie called? Yeah.
Under the Shadow.
Under
okay.
the Shadow.
Under the Shadow. I mean, it's on, what year did this come out?
Like 2 years ago? It's on Netflix.
Really?
Yeah, I write about it like a lot because I really love Babak. And I think, I don't remember what he's doing next, but he's doing another big horror film after that because it's so fucking good. And the same thing with like Eyes of My Mother.
Oh, that's a creepy one, yeah.
You know, Nicholas Pesci, we talked about him when Lin
Shaye.
Yes,
yes.
I mean, I think that was on, that's on streaming right now.
You know, as I'm sure our listeners know, we've been tweeting out horror film recommendations for every day in October. Mm-hmm. And I think today or yesterday, sometime this week, was the French film Eyes Without a Face, which is super creepy.
Yeah.
Les yeux sans visage.
And a great poster. That's what made me. I saw the poster. Oh, and there was, speaking of posters, there was another one. I think this was your recommendation, April, that on poster alone, I was like, I am all in on this.
Chopping Mall, right?
Oh, no. No. The Dead Mountaineers Hotel.
That's where they're getting like an electric socket is like in their
Dead Mountaineers Hotel.
Oh, what is that?
That is it's an Eastern European one. My friend Nathan, who listens to the show sometimes, he had recommended it to me like a few years back, and it is fucking weird.
That poster's weird as fuck.
It's like it's more atmospherically horror,
okay.
You know, because there's like a murder and they call in the cops and then it's just weird shit happens. But it's really beautiful. And the look of it is kind of like a precursor to a lot of films that happened in like the U.S. in the 1980s. And you know, God, what is the one I'm thinking about? Hunger specifically.
Mm. Mm.
Do you guys remember Hunger? Susan Wait,
the
Sarandon?
Tony Scott movie?
The Hunger, yeah.
The Hunger. Never seen it, but I always wanted to. I always thought that movie looked naughty.
That's an iconic that's an iconic queer film, so yes, yeah. I saw it
obviously
a lot.
You know that one.
I remember Bernard Rose, who later made Candyman, did a film in the early 90s, called Paper House. And there's a thing where like there's a father who has been is like, I think, alcoholic and abusive, but he's been gone or something. And you see the kid like looking at a picture of him, and then suddenly he leans forward. Ooh. And I just remember that moment being like, wah!
Oh. Well, I out of this conversation, I got The Haunting and Under the Shadow. Those are on my list. And People Under the Stairs. That's the other one you said, right, April?
Yeah.
Yes.
I had that on VHS. I wish I didn't sell all my VHSs because I had some good ones. Leprechaun in the Hood, part 1 and 2. I watched that so much. I would get so stoned and watch that movie
April,
so
you
much.
You just dropped Leprechaun in the Hood on people,
and I'm gonna
starring Ice-T.
I'm going to, not starring, but, you know.
Featuring.
I'm going to say that, like, the lead actor in that one, I can never remember his name. He went and he did some soap operas and stuff after that. But he gives such a convincing performance. And it is one of those things where you're like, you have committed to this ultra ridiculous role. And I commend you, sir. You know, he's just like, just breaking down in tears, wearing a red dress. And he's just like, yeah, it's
Say what you will. Good. You are not phoning this in.
No, he was there. He was present, and he was working with his director. So,
well, look at that, April. We just got through that whole Halloween segment. That one.
Oh my God!
That was
thanks
all right.
For helping
we did
me
it.
Out.
We did it, y'all. Oh. I believed in you con fuerza siempre. Before we go, it is time for our staff picks, y'all. Every week, we ask the panel tell us about a movie we think folks should check out. Any movie at all, Alonzo.
Opening Friday, at least in New York and L.A., maybe some other markets, is Can You Ever Forgive Me?, which we touched on briefly last week. Melissa McCarthy plays an author named Lee Israel, who was having a hard time getting book work, really needed to get money, and then started a rather lucrative and totally illegal side gig forging letters from famous authors and selling them to collectors. And it is a great Melissa McCarthy performance. She really gets to sort of lean into the kind of darkness and coiled rage that a lot of her best characters have. And it's just a really smart movie. It's co-written by the great Nicole Holofcener. It's directed by the woman who made Diary of a Teenage Girl, Martine Heller?
Heller. Marielle, thank
Marielle
you.
Marielle, thank
I don't
you.
Know why.
I knew there was an M in there. Sorry, you're in another time zone. Anyway,
Emily Heller, her sister, is coming on my show soon. I'm like, I know Marielle Heller's name.
Really kind of nails, you know, the early 90s period. Terrific performances by both Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant. Check this movie out.
More.
I've been waiting for that movie for a year. No joke. I love literature movies.
Oh, wow.
I love them with so much of my heart, and I've been waiting for that one for so long. So it's really good to hear that people are liking it, because cool. I'm super excited.
Yeah, I saw the trailer to that. Not since Spy have I been excited about a Melissa McCarthy joint like that one. I think it's going to be fucking dope. April?
That's fun. I love that, like, Spy is the other one that you're, like, Spy and then a one about a...
People
book
sleep on
letter
Spy.
Forging. Oh,
people
I love
sleep
Spy.
On
it. Great.
People
great.
Sleep on it to this day. Like, that movie is one of the best comedies to come out in the last. Has it been 5 years since that movie came out?
Something like that.
Five, 6 years, something like that.
And I still defend the 2014 Ghostbusters.
All right.
But,
okay.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Well, there's some funny parts on that one for
I
sure.
Think there are.
Yeah. I liked it before it started and then after it ended. That was funny.
You are just a troll. Look at you over there in the corner. You're just
a White
little
Sox
troll.
Or a MAGA hat.
Come Whoa, on now.
Just a little troll.
Come on now.
For my recommendations, I'm going way back. In honor of Angela Lansbury's birthday, I think that people should catch up with The Picture of Dorian Gray.
Ooh.
And The Picture of Dorian Gray is something that I'm sure our listeners, if you haven't seen it, you've heard about what this is. It's been in the culture for a very long time, because the premise of this movie is that there is a person who kind of sold his soul, and there's a picture of him that will age, but he will never age. And so he's also kind of trapped in this thing. But Angela Lansbury, it was her first film role that she, I think it was her first film role that she got. Yeah, because she got Gaslight after that from doing The Picture of Dorian Gray, was recording them filming them almost simultaneously. But she also has a really beautiful song in this called Goodbye, Little Yellow Bird. And it is so wonderful. And she's so sweet in this movie. And this one got her an Academy Award nomination, I think, for Supporting Actress, as did Gaslight, I believe. So she had two right out of the gate. And she was super wonderful. So, right, you know, you can watch Gaslight, too. I think that we've talked about that quite a bit. But The Picture of Dorian Gray, put it into your cultural consciousness.
Based on the novel by Oscar Wilde.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what's up. He's one of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh my God,
yes,
I love that.
That's what he is.
Oh my God, are you recommending the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Read the book. Do not watch that movie.
Let's be very clear. Graphic novel, yes. Movie
I'm recommending a movie that I mentioned a little earlier, Robert Zemeckis' Contact. I love that goddamn movie, since we're talking about space movies. I think it's one of Jodie Foster's best roles. I think it's one of Robert Zemeckis' last great movies. It's got Angela Bassett, who can always walk into a room and tell people exactly what the hell to do, and everybody listens right away. It's one of the best trailers that I've ever seen. I think the flaw in that movie is that whole movie is about building to a moment. And when you get to that moment, it's very hard to satisfy what the, you know, be satisfied by what the reveal is going to be.
Mm-hmm. I have thoughts, but I won't spoil it.
Yeah, I mean, when people say them, I'm like, yeah, I get it. But I was a sucker for it. I think it's great.
Is Jake Busey the lunatic in that movie?
Yeah, he is. Jake Busey. Shout out to Jake Busey's teeth in that movie.
He's in a movie called Haunted Prison that was like a sci-fi original, like from a long time ago. And man, he plays a really great villain in a general way.
What did we just saw Jake Busey in The Predator? Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Jake Busey. Shout out to you, buddy.
I've already forgotten The Predator. I swear.
And you're like, wait, we watched The Predator?
Jake Busey was in that? I don't even know.
Okay. Yeah, we did.
Oh, whatever.
We made it out on the other side. Okay. We did okay. Next week, we are going to be talking about Halloween with UCB regular and one of the hosts of the Horny for Horror podcast, Betsy Sodaro. If you like what you're hearing, leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show. It's October, as Alonzo mentioned. We are tweeting out scary movie recommendations, so make sure you check out our Twitter feed every day to see something that maybe you'll watch at your Halloween party. Yo, Alonzo, April, I mean, just what a
trooper.
A trooper, a performance. You did it, yo.
I'm here. I
maintaining
love you guys.
Consciousness.
I'm going to definitely go to bed.
If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, please tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod or send us an email at WhoShotYa at MaximumFun.org. We have a Who Shot line. You can call in and leave us a message. You know, if you got questions for us, if you want to know more things about the show, you can call us at WSY8031664. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our substitute producer today, Christian Duenas.
Champ.
One and only. Thank you for joining us. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.